found this in Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
Signifiance.
Welcome to another episode of Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me...
the inscrutable Aaron O'Brien.
The inscrutable?
Inscrutable. Inscrutable is a different thing.
Oh, Sulu doesn't know that, though.
That's to be discovered.
This is a first, I think. This is the first time we're talking specifically about a original series animated episode.
Yeah, we're dedicating. We thought we'd take it down a notch. We talked about two movies before, and maybe just to make it a little more chill, a little more relaxed, we're just going to talk about something light.
Light, like a salad.
Like a salad. Maybe could I have some talking asparagus?
With tendrils?
With tendrils with that?
I wonder if it's related to what came out of Harry's nose.
Oh, man. Yeah, so we are talking about the animated series, The Infinite Vulcan.
Infinite.
This is an interesting interesting story. How did you feel about this after watching it?
It was interesting. Like, I mean, they were definitely trying to hit your standard Star Trek staple, like views, like, oh, you know, you don't want to justify murder, even if it's, like, beneficial,
right.
Quote unquote. I'm doing air quotes that you can't see.
Right.
Beneficial.
Right, right. I'll tell you, I was kind of surprised in some things because I was like, I liked the feeling of it. It's, I mean, okay, so we all know, and we've touched on this before, that this Filmation cartoon production is not the best.
It's the fuggliest cartoons.
Yeah. I mean, this is like... I mean, it's watchable, but it's not like what...
I mean, they do make the characters look like their counterparts. I mean, DeForest Kelly's got his giant down arrows underneath his eyes.
Yeah. I mean, no, we... I mean, everything looks the same, but it's just... there's like a lot of like rehashed... cartoon cells used over and over again.
Like they make like three frames of animation for one thing and they play it like 60 times.
Yeah, but this is the thing I enjoyed about this episode especially is that it reminded me of like an older like 50s and 60s sci-fi like short stories and stuff like this. Something like Asimov might have wrote, you know, that's just like it's just a wild idea and like anything is possible, you know, and it's like you don't know quite where they're going to go with it, you know. It's like you don't know what the next page is going to come to. You know, I like that about the old sci-fi. It's like now is everything's very predictable. Like, oh, we're going to get this, we're going to get that. This is kind of like out there.
You know? Yeah, it's definitely really, really out there. And I know we're making fun of the animation just now, but at the same time, like, there's no way, there's no, absolutely no way this could have been in the original series.
Not without looking, without so bad.
Not even Next Generation could have done this. I mean, maybe, I mean, Voyager started using CG, so like this alien could have appeared on Voyager maybe.
Voyager or Enterprise, possibly.
Yeah, definitely Enterprise, but I mean, like, there's no way, like, I mean, before Voyager, that this would have been a feasible idea at all, unless they used, like, the worst puppets ever. Like, I mean, it would just be, like, they'd have to do a lot of, like, you know, like, green screen, I guess, this technology,
yeah.
Which, I mean, the 60s is even before where green screen was really used. I think they used mirrors.
Right. Well, so, the thing is here, we have the, this is, the episode starts off with the Enterprise been ordered to investigate this planet of the Phylos, is this planet, and it's supposed to be on the periphery of the galaxy. I don't know where that lands out in the Federation space.
Well, technically, Earth is pretty close, is in one of the arms our solar system. So, I mean, it's probably not too, too far from the edge.
Right, and we've seen that before, Enterprise being catapulted to the edge of the galaxy. But anyways, so they come down to this planet. They're trying to find life signs because there are structures on the planet. And when they get down there, they're heading towards a structure, and Sulu makes a friend with his little alien.
it almost looks like a tribble, except he calls it a plant, and they can get up and walk around.
So yeah, this little plant puts its roots down on the ground, sits there, and then gets up and starts walking. And he's
its roots look an awful lot like giant spikes.
Yeah, yeah, and he goes,
I think I have a friend, Captain.
He goes, they're all over the place. I think it likes me. And Kirk says, we always encourage our officers to make friends with the natives. And he was like, oh, my.
Oh, my. I was telling Aaron, it's a wonder this thing isn't more cylinder-shaped for right. Sulu to enjoy.
So Sulu thinks that he's going to be, friendly and pick up
a strange plant you've never met before.
And the alien creature basically stings him or gives him this little thorn, and Sulu just falls over dead or half dead.
Dying. And McCoy's like, the trioxylene's not working. It's not fast enough.
Yeah, and he's like, give him. And Kirk's like, give him more. Because that always works.
Because sitting on the edge of forever, we always know more equals good.
Yeah. So before he can administer more drugs.
Three walking asparagus.
Three plant-like creatures show up. I don't know. These are the Phylosians. And the leader is called Agmar.
Not to be confused with Phylosians.
No. Very different. And they basically give him this little dewdrop. And this dewdrop
is something they secrete.
Yeah, and it it heals Sulu immediately. And
McCoy's like, oh my goodness, this is like amazing technology. And, like, this is a minimal effort.
Yeah. And they were like, well, how do you know it will work on humans? He's because it's been, we've had humanoid aliens here before. And they're like, huh? We're kind of the first humans that should be here. Why would there be other humans here?
Because if the eugenics war didn't give us enough crap.
There's more crap,
as we've seen from the past three episodes.
Yeah.
The eugenics war has also sprouted.
Eugenics wars is a war that just keeps giving. Yeah.
Oh, man. I really want to see like an epic con versus plant battle.
Oh, that'd be great.
Plant awesome. Battle.
The plant battles. So,
it totally gives eugenics for a whole new thing. And the plants are not mentioned anywhere in the con comic. For those of you who are wondering, I'm very sad.
They never mention them. I'm surprised. So,
considering the JJ movies stole pretty much everything from yesteryear and put it into the original Star Trek movie, it's a shame. It's a wonder they didn't take more from the animated series.
Yeah, that's a good point. So here we have, they were introduced to the Phylosians, and they were like, well, so we've had humanoids here before, and that they were, they take them into their, like, compound building, and,
there's a bunch of dead ones that are giant.
There's giant, and they,
Spock is like, they use 70% of their brain, that's really high.
Yeah, Spock was somehow very impressed with that. And these were like the last that they're seeing. They were and they're saying their race has been dying off.
Yeah, the human that came brought with him disease. It ravaged the planet, but he was also able to stop the disease. So instead of like cursing him as like their destroyer, they're now praising him as their like creator or like their savior. I'm like, he's a little bit of A, very little bit of B, because there's not very many of them left, and they can no longer reproduce.
Right, and here's the thing I thought was very interesting. Now, this is obviously a Saturday morning cartoon, you know, for kids.
Yeah.
And they
they're using some really big words.
They use, like, stuff, was it Cephalopolis or whatever it is, like, remember? Totally butchering the word, like the type of bacteria that we get sick off.
Cephalococcus.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that, like, a gram positive, you know, this thing's like, wow, this is like, these are like actual, like, you know, like it would just go over kids' heads, but these are actual, like, you know, like what causes bacteria and infections and stuff like that.
They're using actual legitimate scientific words. And later in the episode, Sulu says Vulcan mind touch. I thought it was Vulcan mind meld. I was like, maybe meld is too hard for kids to get. But then I rewatched the episode. There's all these other really hard words. And I'm like,
Maybe because Spock 2 just touches his head. That's all he was like, man.
They should have smashed his head in little bits. It's like, oops. Oops. I didn't know how strong I was.
Right. Duh. Sorry. It's like baby Huey or something.
Because he hadn't assimilated all the knowledge yet. He's like, oops, pop.
Well, so as they're marveling at all this and Agmar's kind of giving the backstory, they're all of a sudden attacked by these...
dragon plants.
Yeah, these flying creatures, which actually these show up later on in different episodes as just like, again, they just...
generic dragon,
yeah, this is like,
pterodactyl,
yeah,
thing.
Things that just, you know, attack Kirk and crew whenever they just feel like it. So at Filmation's laziness of they can't even animate a different creature.
No, but it's just like the thing swoops in and then another one swoops in. It's like they made this one swoop animation and then it just swoops in like another dozen times.
Right.
I'm just like, really?
And their phasers...
trying to fill up that 22 minutes, man.
Yeah, the phasers don't work and...
We have a machine...
Yeah, it kind of like dampens everything.
Even their belt buckle lights.
Yeah, that's later. We'll find out that. Right. But so they're all kind of like a Kirk and crew get like entangled.
Kirk gets accosted by the bird thing. He's like, I think they're after you, Captain. And then they all like get tangled up in these tendrils that these like pterodactyl plants have.
Right. And then they fly Spock off. Just swoop him away.
I think it was a decoy.
It's like they wanted Captain. Nope. They wanted Spock.
Nope. Kirk wishes they wanted him.
Where are these?
It's like, oh, they're taking me to the green, they're taking me to the plant women.
Where's a sexy beast taking me?
Maybe there'll be some green plant women. Orion Mark II.
I was hoping Agmar and me would get together later. I wasn't quite clear on his sex. Or whatever it was.
Plants are usually asexual.
Right. So,
he does it with himself. But apparently all the spores are gone, so apparently they like whatever the plant equivalent to jerking off is, they did that too much in their youth and like, oh, we're out of spores.
They're sterile
now.
They're all sterile. They were told that Spock has been abducted by and he is the master has been searching for years for a specimen like Spock in the whole galaxy. Now the galaxy will live in peace and harmony, and they all kind of chant this like cult like chant, like praise to the master,
praise to the master,
praise to our master, our savior.
He killed us and then saved us. So
he saved us.
I guess we'll be thankful that he didn't let us all die.
Hey, we're still alive. I got that going for me. And then they meet their master. Dr. Stavos Caniculus 5.
I was like, what, is he a robot? And then it's like, oh, well, he's a clone. So they throw in the number for the clone.
Well, here's the crazy part of this whole thing, is that the clones are 30 foot, 25 foot tall. They're huge.
Like, yeah, they're like Attack of the 50 foot clone.
Yeah, no, they're huge. I mean, so Dr. Caniculus 5 is literally, like, he's huge. He's a giant. And he comes out, he's like, he's all muscle bound and angry looking. And
he likes bench pressing buildings.
Yeah, he's been. And he says that Spock's essence belongs to him, and he wants to clone Spock to make a galactic peacemaker.
Ooh, my, his essence.
Yes.
It's like, where did Spock sign up for this? Is he Pungfaring and we didn't know about it?
They just sued him off. They're just basically essence raping him, you know, just taking it from him. Back in Doctor Strangelove, they're taking his fluoridation. Anyways.
But Kirk and crew are forced to evacuate.
Yeah, they said, you got to go. And somehow he able to call up to Enterprise and beam up, which serves to be a problem later on.
They can't even communicate later on.
Yeah, but strangely enough, they can do it right now. So
I guess they're technically in a different place, sort of.
Right, yeah.
It's 200 times more dense than lead.
So he's basically like, you know, leave or you'll suffer the consequence. And so Kirk's like, well, I guess I'll go. And they're up there and they're trying to figure out basically what they can do to get Spock back and who is Caniculus 5.
So Uhura gets a homework assignment. She's going to do a research paper, and the computer, the Enterprise computer, is slowing her down.
Yeah, it's just like it's.
I guess it's a Pentium One or something.
Taking super long to find that eugenics war information.
Oh man,
you think that the eugenics file would be like on the top? There's kids just running into that crap all the time.
After Con, it's like, oh, what are the chances we'll run into something else eugenics war related?
We'll never run into another.
Good thing. Good thing they didn't have a new historian on board to fawn over. Yeah. Nicholas Five. It's like, oh, he's so big.
Oh my god, he's a giant.
I wonder if it'll fit.
It doesn't.
But I'm gonna try.
Just a tip.
MacGyver's. It's like MacGyver's sisters.
No,
MacGyver's.
No, MacGyver's. Just a tip. Just a tip. Just a tip.
MacGyver's sisters also MacGyver's.
Just a tip.
She's got a twin sister. Who knew?
Not the whole thing. Just a tip. Anyways, so
there actually is no MacGyver's sister. We were just
no, she's gone.
Yeah, she's gone.
And so here's here's another reference I thought was interesting. When Uhura finds a story about Caniculus Five, that he was a story of, they say, a modern Diogenes wandering the galaxy looking for someone a perfect specimen. Diogenes is a philosopher from ancient Greece who would walk around with a lantern looking for one true person. So, I mean, and he had other things that he...
upon layers of things children and adults will not get.
I thought
on the 70s television cartoon show.
But this is the thing that I love about Star Trek, and the old Star Trek especially, is that they would throw these things and you go like, who the hell is Diogenes? And then you just like, you know, you look him up and you're like, whoa, Diogenes. Now, I actually did know who Diogenes was, but that was just one of the things I was like, did they really just reference Diogenes? It's...
such an out there reference.
Yeah,
so crazy.
So
it's just funny that he's searching the galaxy whenever they haven't invented interstellar travel yet. Unless he hung around after Con,
he might have. And
they didn't really state that because
it was unclear.
Because Con left in 1999, and then according to Star Trek, interstellar travel doesn't happen until 2018. So, I mean, it's plausible that he would have lived long enough.
He could have been, like, doing a Saddam Hussein, living in a bunker somewhere, you know, waiting to, you know.
But it was unnatural to make sentient plants, so he was not,
right.
Not, beloved.
Right. So Stavos Caniculus, was part of the eugenics wars, left Earth, after losing disagreement with Earth authorities, and he went to find to make a genetically superior master race, a little Nazi-ish.
Sieg Heil! Caniculus!
Too bad he actually found it in an alien, Spock. So,
oh, but it's like the hybrid is perfect. It's perfect. He knew about the Klingons, but he didn't know about hybrids. Like, what if B'Elanna Torres came to him as half Klingon, half? Would she be perfect?
I think you'd still call her a mongrel.
It's like no, not
her. Klingons. Not her. Anybody but her. Yeah.
Although it's interesting that they referenced in this episode again that there's been 100 years of peace in the Federation, which was mentioned in Wrath of Khan.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder about Axanar.
Right.
Because, I mean, I guess the Klingons aren't part of the Federation, so I guess they're not counting that. I don't know, like...
When they talk about the 100 years of peace, I think they're basically going back to Enterprise when Archer makes peace with the Andorians, the Vulcans, and the Tellarites, and it makes the first beginning of the Federation. That these races start working together, and
there's a peace within the Federation. I'm like, well, when has there been war within the Federation?
I think just that they were all kind of like, you know, at each other's throats, and then they kind of worked things out, and then forward from there, they got, you know, obviously more races joined up to the Federation. Yeah. So that's why I think they get the 100. I don't know if
years of peace. Yeah,
I don't know if Archer's, you know, the deals that they made was the actually that's when that started. But I think that was like the beginning of it. You know, like we saw from after that.
I don't know if you've seen the most recent Axanar video, but they did like they started shooting it, and they did like a green screen thing of Saval and Vulcan with a Vulcan woman,
mm-hmm.
and in it. They're talking about the possibility of Vulcan leaving the Federation.
Hmm.
It was just kind of interesting. I'm like,
I'm sick of this place.
Oh, it's just that Saval is fighting to keep the Vulcan in the Federation, but Vulcan's kind of wanting to pull out because of the war that's been kind of brewing between the Klingons and the humans.
Right, right.
So I'm interested to see how it's going to play out.
Axanar looks great. Can't wait to see what that
can't wait.
That looks like.
But back to
the
infinite Vulcan.
So here, so after they find that information, they decide to beam down, and that they have to they're going to trick Agmar and Caniculus by when they beam down, they're going to
have Scotty take the Enterprise away
For
only 30 minutes and then come right back.
Right, but it's a kind of cool idea. Just like, you know, so they're just saying, oh, they just took off. They abandoned their crewmate. And in the meantime,
so they don't think anyone beamed down for whatever reason. I don't know why they wouldn't have detected that, but
It's possible that you could probably beam down without being detected, especially with original series technology. It's not as like advanced as next gen. Where next gen, everybody can detect everything all the time. They just beamed down.
They beamed. They're here.
Cargo
B6.
So Kirk and McCoy and Sulu beam down.
Wait. But before they beam down, McCoy has looked up his great-grandfather's plant. It's a weed killer.
Yeah. He says, my great-granddaddy had the best garden
in the South.
Yeah. And then he was like, you know, and I still have the formula.
He was the envy of all.
How do you still have the formula?
He was the envy of all the people of the eugenics wars.
It's like, he could kill anything.
All the endangered servants of the eugenics wars.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, exactly. You know.
And then he, and then Scotty makes,
these little guns that shoot. They're like squirt guns.
Yeah. with three nozzles apiece.
Right.
And Scotty, like, they go to beam down, and Scotty's like, these will work. He's like, I'm not sure what's inside them, but I know these will work.
Right, yeah. McCoy's like, it's whiskey.
Wow, just killing things with whiskey. That's a waste of whiskey.
I know. Well, and that's the
holics don't stand for wasting whiskey.
No, you keep whiskey going. It goes into the mouth. McCoy's just shooting it into his mouth. He's got like a squirt gun of whiskey.
And some beans with whiskey.
Yeah.
And some pizza with whiskey.
Yeah. Just whiskey with everything.
Dip your fried chicken in some whiskey.
So they beam down, and they have their flashlight belts on them.
Yeah, well, they find out these spaceships, and they're worried that they might be an invasion force. Although the Mr. Asparagus has told them that they're a peaceful race, but I mean, they've got all these crazy dinosaur plants that are violent, and all these ships that look like it could be an invasion force or mass exodus.
Right, and here's the thing: is that it seems pretty clear that Caniculus 5, and you know, and his predecessors of his clones have been obviously a very forceful personality, and he kind of like, you know, took over the minds and hearts of the people, the Phylosians. So they're just like, they're going to follow him through anything. So he wants to, you know, whatever he tells them to do. And they're like, yes, you know, you are everything.
I love how while they're talking about the ships, they notice one of them sneaking up on them. And Kirk puts him in a grapefruit locker or whatever they have for a head.
He's like, you can't choke me. I don't breathe. Not like you do.
It was such a weird, like, oh, I'm going to grab. Kirk's always going to have a fight or something.
Right. So Kirk's got to beat up a plant.
He puts him in a hold.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just silly. And they convince them to take them to Caniculus 5 to see where Spock's being held. They're like, you know, we have to know where Spock's being held.
Oh, Spock is fine. He's totally cool. Come with us.
Yeah.
These are very deceitful plants.
Yes, and they take him down this long hallway.
They're showing him all these pretty flowers, and they just turn and wilt.
Yeah. And they take him down this long, long hallway.
And then the lights go out.
And they're being chased.
And the plants are nowhere to be seen.
And they're being chased by the...
the dinosaur ones.
The dinosaur dragon guys. The dragon swooping plants.
With tendrils.
With tendrils. And
they're running in the dark. It's like, just keep running.
Just keep running. Even though light bulbs don't work. And
we have no idea where we're running to.
They're bouncing off the walls. And then finally someone sees that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And he's like, just keep going.
It's just a freight train coming your way.
Go to the light.
No, don't go into
the light. Go to the light.
Spock's going into the light.
Yes. Well, they get into where the light is. And this is Caniculus V's lab. And Spock's on this table. And he's like, and McCoy's like, oh, he's almost dead.
And he's only got minutes left, and Enterprise is coming back. And Scotty's like, we got to contact them. And I love how Uhura's giving all the great engineering advice in this part of the season. It's just like, they'll drain the things. He's like, don't I know at last? But I was like, okay. I was like, I'm glad he acknowledged that. I thought it was weird that she was giving out the engineering.
I just thought it was odd that it was like, why would you drain so much? Why would it drain so much power to like
to a narrow beam communication?
Narrow beam of communication.
Apparently, it's so old. They like,
I don't get it. It's like one of those things that just didn't make a lot of sense. It's like, you know, like one of those things with Star Trek is that the writers find reasons for things that just
They have to invent reasons why things are so hard in the future,
right,
whenever they shouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly. So they're trying to get in contact with Kirk, and that's when Caniculus V shows up, and he's, you know, he introduces him to Spock 2.
Spock 2.
Spock 2.
He's like, I cannot transfer consciousness. I have to transfer it because it's not automatically in there whenever the cloning process is done. But this is where we get the infinite Vulcan turn. So he says this. It's like we can't, you know, duplicate the mind.
Right.
But then he's like, I need to make an army of Spock. I'm like, well, but you just said you can't.
Right. Well,
I'm just like, did you think about your plan? You just told them you couldn't.
Well,
copy the consciousness.
I think the interesting thing is that what would make even if you clone Spock and transfer his intelligence to, you know, to Spock 2, what would make you think that Spock 2 is even going to listen to you? You know, like he'd be like, yeah, let's.
Because he didn't take time to talk about Spock's philosophical beliefs or his stance on violence and whatnot.
Right.
He just abducted him and started transferring his brain because
apparently. That's what he does.
Half humans, half Vulcans are the key.
Yeah, I don't know, but
too bad they didn't run into a half human, half Tellarite.
That would be hilarious.
I want to see a half Andorian. I want to see a half Tellarite. These are halves we've not seen. We've seen half Klingons.
That's a good point. What do they look like?
A half Ferengi.
That's one ugly kid.
Half human, half Ferengi.
That's one ugly kid.
I mean, we've seen human and Vulcan, human and Klingon, and we've seen mix of Cardassian and Bajoran.
That's right.
I guess we've seen human Romulan, but I mean, it's not going to be any different than human Vulcan.
Right. Well, they get the head ridges.
Well, the kid didn't.
That's right.
The one that was on trial with Picard, and Picard was like, this is just a witch hunt, blah, blah, blah. But, he didn't have any head ridges.
I don't think he was half. I think
he was a quarter.
I think he said he had a lineage of...
I think it was like one quarter or one eighth.
Yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about the Next Generation episode of Drumhead.
Fantastic episode.
Yeah, great episode. I forgot the name of the ensign who goes on trial. Well, he's not even on trial, but whatever. We digress. Anyways,
tangents within tangents within tangents.
So Spock 2 is slowly getting himself acclimated to his new brain, and the original Spock is dying on the table, and that's when
Scotty gets through with his narrow beam finally,
and they basically tell him information is like, who cares? It's like Caniculus V was, you know, he wanted to take over the world and make a, you know, make the master race and stuff like that. And they're like, what?
Oh, we already, he pretty much told us that.
I've pretty much figured out he's a giant dick, so I don't think
Sulu's all about that.
Sulu's like, oh my, Caniculus V.
What's the five stand for?
5 foot.
Ooh. 5 foot dollar longs.
I bet it's longer than that, actually.
Maybe he's a small giant.
He's got a micro penis for a giant, but 5 foot's still pretty massive for us humans. So I knew that joke was going to come up with that. This episode.
That's why you picked this episode.
No, actually it wasn't. So during this, so they Spock's dying on the table. There's no way they're going to recover him. And they start to appeal to Spock too, saying, Kirk says, what logic is letting a man die for the sake of creating a duplicate? Explain it to me. And
give it to me logically, Spock.
Yeah,
and he brings up like the Vulcan infinite diversity, infinite combinations,
which is great.
They do, and
yeah, and that's from another episode. I can't remember what that was from, but that is, I've heard that before. I can't remember what exactly. It was from an original series episode, but it is a great, it's a great philosophy. So it's like one of those things, like, yeah, because it does make sense. Why would you make an army of Spocks? Because that would be exactly contrary.
And supposedly you can't have more than one mind, so I mean, we can have a bunch of dummy Spocks.
Right. Yeah, and he decides that Spock 2 decides he's going to mind meld with the original Spock to give him back his brain, which this has happened before.
What?
Spock's brain.
What? Oh, Spock's brain. Oh, yeah. And then Star Trek 3, and then
hey, he's always losing his marbles.
Okay, we need to invent a thing that goes on Spock's head that prevents his brain from leaking out, because it's just
Spock has lots of problems with his brain leaking out.
But people can live without their brain. I mean, there's brain dead people all the time.
They're called vegetables.
Yeah.
Right, Agmar?
But yes, we are vegetables.
All hail the master.
All hail. We don't get much hail. It hurts us. We are plants.
Ow. Oh.
Agmard.
My back hurts, Agmar.
Oh, no. We're so spineless.
So, they don't have any bones. So, Spock 2 brings back Spock, and after the revitalizing, they
explain that there's peace for 100 years, which you were talking about earlier.
That there's no need for this army of Spocks or whatever. That they're trying to, you know, Caniculus 5 is trying to build, that there's no reason for it, and just let's go on from there. And
Caniculus 5 thinks about performing seppuku because he has no reason to go on anymore.
Yeah.
He's like, my purpose is gone. I've been cloned 5 times to bring peace to the galaxy, and it's already here. What am I going to do? And Spock 2 is like, hey, let's fix the plants.
Yeah.
We'll hang out here together and bro it up, and we'll fix the plants.
Yeah, and that was kind of interesting twist of it. Because there's they
have two full Spocks.
Well, one giant Spock.
Yeah. So in Star Trek 2, after he died, they should have just gone back to Caniculus and like, hey, can you clone us a smaller Spock?
Yeah. They don't really explain why he's so big. They don't really explain why the clones are so large.
I guess it makes it easier to get around on a planet that doesn't have any cars.
I don't want to invent cars. All the carbon monoxide will kill all the plants. I need these guys. They're my workers. So
all four of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Hail, Savior.
You're my savior. You didn't invent the combustible engine. Which, actually, there wouldn't be any oil on the planet, would there? Because there was no dinosaurs that would die before and left a, oil deposit.
Who knows remains or geological.
Oh, that's true. There could have been like some kind of like a dinosaur race before them or some large.
Well, plants. I mean,
plants can create oil of some sort, but not, usually these animal deposits.
Where you get really big ones.
Right.
Our cars run on dinosaurs.
So we hit, and then we get to probably the most. You thought this was bizarre. This whole episode was bizarre. The most bizarre thing to me was the very end where during one of the fights, Sulu flips one of these plant creatures over his shoulders or something like that, sort of like he did in Search for Spock up in the
where he does the new jutsu or something like that.
Don't call me tiny.
Don't call me tiny.
So he flipped
even
one.
Though I am.
He flipped. He flipped one of these plant creatures, and Kirk goes to him at the very end. He says, "By the way, Mr. Sulu, any chance you could teach me that body throw? Could come in handy sometime." He goes, "I don't know, sir. It isn't just physical. You know, you have to be inscrutable." And he goes, and Kirk goes,
like, "You are the most scrutable person I know." And I'm just like,
what? And then, and then,
why are children watching this?
And then, literally, Sulu winks at him, winks at the screen, and then the show ends.
It's just like, what?
Why did they throw that even in there? It's not even like.
Children won't know what the word means.
I mean, it's just like, it's one of those things that's so odd that they would even throw that in there. It's not even a funny joke.
It's not. It's like, it's not funny at all. And I was just telling Aaron, I'm like, oh, doesn't he mean inscrutable?
Inscrutable? You're the most screwable person.
You're the most screwable person I know. Oh, my. Yeah, because, you know.
I don't know. I was thinking that first that, like, you know, G.I. Joe used to have, like, that...
PSAs at the end?
Yeah, I thought maybe it was, like, the word of the day kind of thing that they're trying to teach kids something.
Don't step on electricity wires that are on the ground.
Don't whiz on the electric fence. No. You know? but I mean, it was one of those things that I thought...
Pork chop sandwiches.
Yeah, no, I didn't know what that came from. And none of the other episodes have anything quite like that. So it wasn't like something else that they... It's like a thing they did at the end that would be like...
No, it was just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
This is just really, really weird. Right. But on the plus side... This episode was written by Walter Koenig.
Yes.
Who has been on the show before.
Yes, he's one of our guests on the show. And so from what I read that...
This was his first writing credit.
Yes.
That was ever put on film or anything. This is the first thing he's accredited to writing.
He got kind of screwed out of this out of the animated series. Everyone else got signed on to be part
to,
of
to voice their original their characters, character,
but
not him.
But not him. And he even wanted to be the voice of Caniculus 5. And they said that, oh yeah, we'll. And he even like auditioned for the part, but they never even used him. And he kind of feels like they were kind of just screwing around with him. So I'm not quite sure what
was
about.
I wonder why they didn't do that.
I don't know.
Like we haven't talked about the motion picture yet, and so I'll probably say this again during the motion picture. But he originally wasn't even going to be part of the motion picture because they originally wanted it to be a prequel. And if it was a prequel and he was supposed to be like 16 or 18 or whatever it is when he first came on the Enterprise, it wouldn't make sense for him to be like 30 or whatever he is by the time the motion picture comes out and then do a prequel. Because I think, I don't know, like there's all sorts of weird things that were happening with Star Trek 1.
Yeah. And here's the other weird thing, because so, I mean, and I have a lot of respect for the vision of Gene Roddenberry, but obviously Gene Roddenberry was at the helm for Star Trek, the motion picture, but he was also very much in charge of a lot of the writing for the animated series, and he was, you know, and, I mean, they went through a lot of drafts for the script, and he kept on saying that. Because it was an animated series, that they could do a lot of things that they could never do, in the TV show, mm-hmm. And he wanted to have talking vegetables. I mean, Walter Koenig kept on was like, "You really want talking vegetables?" And he's like, "Yeah, they're going to be talking vegetables. That's what they're going to be." And he just kept on going on, and he just kept on going on and on and on. And it was like one of those things that was so bizarre. And Walter Koenig, I mean, obviously made his own. Take on it, but it was he kept on he was harping on that it had to be talking vegetables, like a talking broccoli, talking asparagus and stuff like that, you know.
Well, if you want to go with the other things, Gene Roddenberry really, really wanted Deanna Troi was supposed to have a third breast.
Yeah, I mean,
like, I mean, like, I love Gene. He created Star Trek.
And he had a big vision.
He had a big vision, but his small ideas for it, like three-breasted women and talking vegetables.
We saw three-breasted women in Total Recall.
Oh, well, yeah.
You make me wish I had three hands. You're doing fine just by those two.
Well, I think the cat lady in Star Trek V did have three. But
did she?
I think she had three.
Well, because the cat lady, she shows up also in the animated series as well.
Well, it's a different cat lady.
Yeah, no, but, it's not the same. But she had only two.
Yeah, but you know, animated series. But you know, it's more than two for kids would probably be too much for kids to handle.
What is that,
mommy? Why is there three lumps on her chest? No, but like you know, I know George Lucas gets a lot of rag for the prequels and stuff like that. But I mean, like you know, Gene Roddenberry made you know was heavily involved in Star Trek, the motion picture, and it's kind of a mess. He's almost sort of the George Lucas of Star Trek because, I mean, he came up with the idea, a fantastic idea, came up with a great world, just like George Lucas did. But when it comes to execution of his own work, it's like...
Well, the thing is, too, is, like, I think the premises are great, and I think the big idea is great, but, like, I think, like, you want to, like, get some of the smaller things, you know, to have, like, other people come up with things like race ideas and design ideas. Like, you don't want it to all be from one person. I think that's stagnation anyways. You don't want everything coming from one person. The world, you know, having collaboration with a team, you're going to come up with a lot bigger ideas.
And, I mean, if you think about it this way, I mean, like, Gene Roddenberry hated Star Trek 2 and hated Star Trek 5. Well, everyone kind of hated Star Trek 5, but he hated Star Trek 6. And 2 and 6 are, like, my favorite Star Trek movies, and he really didn't like anything to do with it. He didn't want to have anything to do with them.
Well,
he tried to get him to change them a bunch, too.
I think Star Trek 2, I mean, obviously it's one of my favorite movies, but I don't think it really has anything to say necessarily about the vision of Star Trek, per se. I think Star Trek VI does. We see, you know, the idea of the olive branch of peace being brought out and how people could learn to get along. But, I don't know. It's like Roddenberry, you know, I think a lot of people have – I mean, when you have someone who's so original and so different than everything else, sometimes they're going to say things and do things. They're so offbeat. You're like – I don't even know what you're talking about. And I think we've all known people who are, even if they're not a Gene Roddenberry, like, you know, who's done something amazing like Star Trek, but we've known people who are so original, and when you, like, they have some cool ideas, but then a lot of stuff, they're like, what are you?
What? Yeah, it's just so off the wall, it doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we've all been, you know, in contact with someone like that, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's definitely interesting. So, yeah, Walter Koenig wrote this story, went through a lot of drafts, and it was definitely not a...
not his original intent, but he was happy to have, you know, at least the basis of his ideas presented on screen.
Right. And, you know, that was cool that he got that, and then it was cool that this got to be a point where it was, you know, like, he got more writing credits afterward. You know, for doing, you know, doing,
yeah, other shows, yeah. and such like that.
And he really liked getting paid.
Yes, getting paid is a very good thing when you're an actor / director / writer in Hollywood, because sometimes it can be hard to find.
But you know who didn't do well?
Uh-oh.
You are the most beautiful woman in the galaxy. You don't know how long I've wanted to tell you that.
But you're afraid.
Yes.
Of me?
Of us, of what might become. Then you're inviting me in.
I'm not sending you away.
That's more than I expected.
Is it as much as you hoped?
To hope is to recognize the possibility. I had only dreams.
Dreams can be dangerous.
Not these dreams. I dream of a galaxy where your eyes are the stars and the universe worships the night.
Careful. Putting me on a pedestal so high you may not be able to reach me.
Then I'll learn how to fly. You are the heart in my day and the soul in my night.
We lost two more relays. I can't!
Shut up, kid.
And today, we are bringing you a fail. It's really weird. I think we're finding a lot more fails than scores.
Yeah, I think
we're going to have to start talking more about Next Generation so we can get some more scores going.
Get some more record scores in there. But yes, unfortunately, our man, your man.
Oh my.
Everyone's man, Sulu. Failed. He unfortunately thought he could be friends with the small creature and
picked it up and got pricked.
Yeah.
Ooh, my.
Oh my. You're a little prick.
Yes, indeed.
And that's how the slang, the vernacular came out of you little prick.
Exactly. Yeah, it came from this episode, for a children's episode. Yeah,
nobody knew what that meant before that. Now it's like, oh.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Everyone
it's
knows like, about
you
that
little
now.
Prick, you, yeah. You took my wallet. So, so he was...
He was seconds away from death, and McCoy almost made his death permanent. by almost not letting the plants help him.
Yeah, he didn't even want the plants. Like, I don't know what you're going to do to him.
They're talking plants. We can't trust them.
This is talking asparagus. We can't trust this. I never trust a vegetable that talks to me.
Especially one that might give me gas.
And, yeah, so he thought he could be friends with this cute little bushy friend. But
It almost looked like a tribble, but no, they were like, it's a plan. Like, oh. Yeah. It probably was, since they reused the animation. They just added the little legs it had where it was following him.
And I think it was called a rel, because it's actually the name of the creatures is Walter spelled backwards.
Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah, yeah. It's Relal. Yeah,
Relal.
Because Agmar says it's a Relal, and that's Walter backwards.
Oh, that's awesome!
So yeah, Walter did that on purpose, of course.
Oh, of course. since he got screwed out of having a voice part. So because he got screwed out of having a voice part, and having Chekhov be the one that always gets injured, it looks like it has fallen on, the burden has fallen upon Sulu.
Let's do Sulu this time. So, yeah. And so Sulu didn't do too well. And, you know, but unfortunately, because of Agmar, we have he goes on to become captain someday of the Excelsior.
Yes.
He owes his life to Agmar.
Agmar. He should have, have a plaque of Agmar in his quarters. That would have been funny if they had just a plaque of Agmar, a photograph, and a frame.
Him and Agmar, his armor on Agmar.
Like, hanging out like buddies.
My buddy
and me. And Christian Slater opens the door and is like, oh, God, what is that picture of?
He's a stuffed Agmar with him in bed. It's like Build-A-Bear. He's got like it's
build a plant creature.
Build an Agmar. He like cuddles up with him. He's like, what are you doing?
It saved my life once.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. Poor Sulu. Try to be friendly with alien races, and it didn't work out for him.
Oh, well, he knows, in the first episode, I think we see Sulu, he's like, they show he's a botanist, so.
Yeah.
So he was definitely interested in plants. I was like,
How did he get the green thumb?
He got pricked.
Stuck it up in Orion's bum.
Ooh. Do they poop green?
I don't know. That's never been discussed. That's for another episode.
We don't really do any bathroom. Like the only bathroom thing we ever see in Star Trek is showers, and it's only very occasionally.
No, a lot of bathrooms.
Archer had a shower, and Star Trek the Motion Picture. Ilea had a sonic shower, and it also provides clothes. It's also a replicator because it provided her clothes too from inside the shower.
Yeah.
We also see B'Elanna. She gets a sonic shower once.
Yeah, we don't really see too many things on bathrooms, toilets, or anything. So I mean, I see them like they use sinks once in a while, but that's about it.
I don't even remember sinks.
Yeah, there's been a few sinks in the original series. Like, they splash water on their face and stuff like that. So, but that's about it.
Yeah, and Janeway was going to take a sonic shower one episode, except for the sonic shower was broken and it cracked her glass. So she decided not to take the sonic shower.
And she didn't take it the whole voyage home. Man, she smelled. Voyage home. She smelled.
Oh, speaking of Janeway, this past yesterday, according to us, was the Star Trek, was Saturday, and that was, I think, the big day for the Star Trek Las Vegas. They had a 20-year reunion of the Voyager panel, and I believe they got the entire cast minus Jennifer Lean to appear on stage together.
Wow.
I think it was the first time, like, Jeri Ryan and...
Wow.
And Kate Mulgrew have been on the same stage like a long, long time.
They try to kill each other on stage.
No, they didn't. No, actually, there's a really nice photo floating around Facebook of them posing together for a picture, just the two of them. I think it's around a signing table. So I'm glad to see that the hatchet is behind them. I keep reading things about, like, during when Voyager was filming, Kate Mulgrew had a very big issue with Jeri Ryan being on the show.
Right.
Which is really sad because, considering their characters work so closely together, almost the entire length of the show.
I always have a hard time. Like, how can you? Like, I mean, I know they're actors and they can like mask those kind of things, but it's like, I don't understand why they have to be so, you know, they're so. I guess they have egos and stuff like that. But I mean, because when I read about stuff,
it just makes me think of like William Shatner, because like he was a total like dick to everybody.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like you read about the stuff in the original series, and it's just you always feel like, oh man, they weren't really that great friends. You know, they were kind of like at each other's throats here and there. You know, and it sucks because it just shatters.
Shatters the illusion of you know how it is, and that's one of the really cool things about Star Trek Continues. The cast of Star Trek Continues is all friends. I mean, I've listened to some of the interviews that Trek Geeks Podcast has done with some of their actors, and like they all say, like after like a busy day of shooting, it's like they go like get food and go out to a movie or something like that. They're like buddies, and they hang out,
right?
And they're like, you know, they spend all day together working, and then they spend all night all night together too. So. Mm-hmm. It's really cool that the chemistry you see on set of Star Trek Continues is actually carried over into the real world, where they care about each other and they're friends. And
right, and you know, even like Next Gen, I heard stories of like Patrick Stewart was kind of like rough on the actors at first, and then he loosened up as time went on.
Well, at first, Patrick Stewart was all about like, oh, you can't joke around on set. You can't, you know, this is serious. This is, you know, you're getting paid to do this.
Right.
And like, you know, everyone else was cutting up and having fun because, I mean, you know, what's life if you're not having fun?
Right.
And eventually they won him over and got him to chill out and to have more fun on set.
And he learned to enjoy himself.
I think you see that really. I mean, like, because Patrick Stewart definitely loosens up a little bit more in season two of Next Generation.
After season one. Yeah, by the end of season two, he's a lot better. And then season three, it's so much easier. I don't know. It is a stiffness in him. And somehow he learned to relax. So it's weird how that translates.
Yeah, it's really weird, but it's really cool that he got into it and was able to relax. And I think that cast was pretty good friends. And I think Voyager, I mean, was okay with each other except for the Janeway Seven of Nine thing.
I don't know anything about Deep Space Nine. I never heard of their like bad blood or anything.
I haven't heard of any.
Yeah, I'm sure there were some things, but.
Baseball!
Let's talk about more baseball.
So I think next time we are going to be having a guest on the show, Justin Demet, to talk about The Inner Light.
The Inner Light. What's inside? We don't know.
Picard's going to play his flute.
Very cool.
And not the one Sulu wants to play.
No.
All right, I think we have it this week for Synthaholics. Live long and prosper, guys. Thank you all for listening. All my music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at synthaholicduo. If you'd like to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan.
You can follow me, Aaron O'Brien, at Blackbird2004. Faith, where can they find you?
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg.
And please subscribe to us. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. And if you have a chance, please rate and review so we can improve. And any feedback is welcome. And so we can make the show even better for you.
Live long and prosper, guys.
At the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
I am at. Dagmar, the talking asparagus. Cover me with butter. Roast me. I am delicious. Your urine will smell.
Bobby Flay will not eat me.
Bobby Flay rejected me from his vegetable cart. I'm a Philosian.
I'm a Philosian?
Philosian. My name is Agmar, the talking asparagus.
Your asparagus will be our asparagus.
We will dominate all your vegetation.
With our vegetable tendrils.
We will put ourselves on your plates. We will push aside any hamburgers, steaks, chicken, or seafood.
And veal.
Veal is out. Asparagus is in.
Asparagus is the new veal.